So with that, I'd just like to say thank you for the invitation to speak here. It's been a nice trip down. It got me away from the horrible weather. As you may have heard in my introduction, I'm a lawyer, not a finance man. In fact, my presentation largely is an accumulation of various observations being made by Wall Street analysts and others about telecom industry and the environment for investment. Lots of issues are on the table in telecom, sort of belong to us. And that's kind of, these are the kind of usual issues that regulators are dealing with, have been dealing with the past eon. And it's all about allocating revenues and costs between competitors, users, and carriers, et cetera. Each of these issues, in and of themselves, makes investors.
Thank you. Is that better? All of these issues add a little bit of cost here, the revenue there, and in total do affect how Wall Street sees the telecom industry. But there's a sort of a much bigger overarching issue that is the forefront, I think, of the general attitude of investors towards telecom. And that relates back to the telecom bust of 2000-2001. There are still quite a few people, investors, who remember those days. And there are certainly many analysts who are, at least analysts who are still on Wall Street, who went through those years. It was a searing experience. And the real question they're all asking, trying to understand, is whether that bust was a one-time event, just a perfect storm of things coming together, the technology, a bubble, the internet, et cetera, all that excitement, or is it really symptomatic of a sort of a fundamental instability? That's something that our organization up in New York at the Columbia Business School have been looking at for the past number of years. They have an ongoing program called originally Remedies for Telecom Recovery. And back in 2003, at our first conference we held on the subject, we came to the conclusion that the telecom industry was suffering from fundamental instability brought about by simple basic economics. Too much capacity, perhaps lots of competition. The carriers, once they make the capital investment, having a race to the bottom in terms of price. It's back. Telecom. But the initial bust was certainly caused by this oversupply of overcapacity, commoditization of the products themselves. There it goes again. And that basically made Wall Street very nervous. And even as recently as the current period, Wall Street analysts are still looking at telecom as a pretty volatile place. Here's a quote from it was in the Wall Street Journal last year.
Try this.
Hello. Okay. So this is called, I guess, diversity and reliability. We switch from one to the other. You know, it's a great principle of telecom. But the view stated here, telecom's a real boom and bust roller coaster business. That's very different, obviously, from the attitude of investors. Let's call it the last century view of telecom, where at one point it was the great widows and orphan stock. Now it's boom and bust. And a lot of people suggest that the Wall Street is driven by two things, investors, fear and greed. And because of the experience at the beginning of this century, the analysts themselves are not at all enthusiastic about telecom. I have two slides here just with some of the most recent forecasts of analysts as they put out their beginning of the year view of telecom. Morgan Stanley is expecting underperformance again. Why? Businesses are slowing down, wireline business slowing revenues, margins are pressured. The wireless industry is approaching, some people think, saturation. We're not fully saturated, but it's getting harder and harder to earn incremental revenues. The actual line losses in the wireline telephone industry is just a horrible prospect from an investor's point of view, as well as from the company's point of view. And yet there's all this new investment needed in broadband and in DSL, new competitors coming in, cable versus telco. So you have a setup of deteriorating historic business, need for substantial amounts of new capital for the new businesses, and is that cycle of overcapacity and price competition either still there or beginning again? Sorry about that, I was behind on one of my slides. I should keep turning around to check. This is the Morgan Stanley view. Stifel-Nicolaus, which is really a Washington-oriented, policy-based analyst group, they're equally cautious on telecom. And why? Capital, increasing CapEx spending, fiber bills, particularly by Verizon, not seeming to convince investors that they're going to see a good return on those fiber bills because they're putting in billions of dollars a year for the privilege of competing with the embedded cable TV business. No, certainly not assured returns on the fiber investments. The rurals are generally favored over the RBOX and the urban carriers simply because it is thought that regulators protect rural carriers and don't protect urban carriers. And the rural carriers obviously suffer from or have the advantage of less competition. You don't find too many competitive companies running into the rural areas generally. And cautious about wireless because of more capital to go into the 3G and even 4G, the data bills, but penetration growing, so the incremental capital is not generating the incremental revenues that the wireless industry is used to getting. But if fear and greed is the driver of Wall Street, investors themselves did pretty well in 2006, and so the greed factor might well be taking over from the actual investors versus the analysts. 2006 was a very good year for telecom investors if you invested in 2005. If you invested in 2000, you're still not back to the levels that you invested at. But if you invested in 2005, 2006 brought some pretty good results. And the two carriers on the far left, Time Warner Telecom and Level 3, are the leaders, if you will, of the competitive industry. Now, these stocks were down in the $1 and $2 range after being at $70 at the height of the boom, and they're basically doubled in the year. So if you bought those stocks at $1 or $2 or $3, and now they're $6 or $8, you're pretty happy. But all the stocks in the universe of telecom did well for various reasons, except for Sprint due to the merger or the split up and having problems with their wireless rollouts. But that's a pretty good record for the industry. So investors themselves are feeling pretty good. And while the analysts are expecting a year of underperformance, at least the investors, and these are the top one, these charts are based on the top 100 institutional investors in the telecom sector. So these are the big players. And they're mostly expecting to at least be in line with the market, and 45% to beat the market, at least by up to 10%. So the investors are generally feeling positive because they had a pretty good year in 2006. Those investors, those large investors, are looking still at wireless as the best sector. It was they were more optimistic on wireless in previous years, so their enthusiasm is down a bit, but nevertheless still the leading sector. And you can see the baby bells and the phone companies are sort of on the right-hand side, still positive, but competitors and the infrastructure players are seen as pretty good investments, and that's where presumably if the investors put their money where their expectations are, you can see where the money will be flowing. What I want to do now is just get into sort of some sector reviews and just see what the investors and analysts are thinking about. This line erosion is a huge nagging problem. It's been pretty continuous for the last 5 years. Down, 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 down. Every time a telephone company, a wireline company loses a customer on the line, they lose the revenue and shed almost no expense. And this just continual erosion, it hits the top line without any offsets in the cost. So it's a real drag on net income and net income growth. And as you can see, it's pretty, whether it's the large Bell companies or the RLX overall, it's consistent right across the industry. Other thing that the overall big part of the big picture, they're seeing that the mix of revenue in telecom is changing. The blue quarter, basically a quarter of the revenue, is good old wireline consumer POTS, or at least consumer business, mostly POTS. That has been shrinking over the years as the percent for wireless and even enterprise sectors has been growing. The growth sectors are obviously where the managements of the companies and investors are tending to invest. So what you're seeing is a shrinking, basically, of the area that is probably of most interest to regulators, certainly in terms of proportion of the total revenue mix, and presumably in where investment and management time and talent will be spent, but for perhaps regulatory interest and maybe some competition. But that is an indication of the direction of where management and investors would be spending their money. There's a lot of capital going into the telecom business. Wireline, looking at about 25, the major carriers are looking to spend about $25 billion a year for the next few years. With a fall off, obviously, in as shown here in 2008, but it's pretty steady, $25 billion. Wireless, a pretty steady $22 billion of capital for the next few years. And cable, a little more variable, but plus or minus $9 billion a year. You know, you're looking in the range for the major cable companies, the major wireless companies, major wireline companies, collectively in the range $50 to $60 billion a year over the next few years. And you can add another probably $10 billion for CLEX, the over-the-top Vonage-style VoIP companies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're looking in the total for the basic telecom sector, $60 to $70 billion a year. That's a lot of capital to be invested. And again, the big mindset of the investor is, how do I get paid back on all of that in a competitive or somewhat competitive marketplace? Overall, the telecom sector is a major driver. This is mislabeled. You should delete the words service provider. This is really a forecast of both the service providers and at least the major corporate users and wholesalers' purchases of telecom equipment and services in the U.S. It's approaching about $1 trillion a year. So telecom is a big, big sector. The carriers themselves probably only spending, in terms of their capital expenditures, only about 10% of that total. Big problem. IPTV, video, streaming on the internet, YouTube, various other applications, video-oriented applications in particular, starting to come onto the internet in huge volumes. We are now seeing, after years and years and years of bemoaning, we've got way too much capacity, we've got a capacity glut, what are we going to do? We're now seeing at least analysts and others suggesting that we're now on the verge, because of these video-based internet applications, on the verge of a capacity shortage. And the question, of course, that concerns the investment community is, okay, who's going to pay for all this new capacity? Particularly when there seems when a lot of people in the internet space, the internet users, think the internet should be free. That doesn't quite jive with the idea that you need massive investments in internet capacity. Going to quickly go just through some more details if you're interested. Where the line growth, the reduction in the wireline trends, a little more detail. It's not going so much to the cable industry, but it's getting rid of those second lines, the fax lines, etc., as people go to broadband, cancel the second internet line. People are using fewer and fewer faxes, so the fax line is largely going away as well. But it's a constant driver because as a matter of national policy, we're certainly trying to encourage broadband adoption, and as broadband adoption goes up, second lines, et cetera, go down. And you're seeing the same thing in Florida. This is from the PSC's report of last year, pretty consistent and roughly in line with the national trends. The various strategies of the carriers are having differences on their margins. The carrier, the major carrier with the best margin, Bell South, basically got itself ready for acquisition, probably didn't spend a whole lot, had pretty strong margins in the last few years. The AT&T, after it started to see some merger synergies, its margins have started to increase, and that has certainly brought it a favorable reaction from Wall Street, particularly in comparison to Verizon. Verizon itself has been spending inordinate amount, or from many people's perspectives, inordinate amounts of capital on its fiber deployment, and that's keeping its margins down and keeping its stock price down. In broadband, the big problem in broadband is it maturing? Again, if it's maturing, that means the incremental sales are likely to be producing less incremental revenue. It's the low-hanging fruit has been achieved, and so the growth, which might be offsetting the decline in wireline, the growth in broadband may be fading out in terms of the overall revenue streams, et cetera, for the telephone companies. We are seeing a major increase in wireless broadband, and the FCC is very happy to see this because it at least gives some credence to the idea that there's not going to be a broadband duopoly, and the increase in mobile wireless has been quite strong in the last year and a half. But that's, you got to remember, this is 3G wireless, not really capable of video and really high capacity file transfers that you get with the cable modem and DSL products. And in fact, in the real world, there's really only two broadband services available to consumers today. It's cable modem service and it's DSL, and all these other things like power line and other things just don't really add up. It's a two-horse race at this moment for broadband. An important thing is, again, from a capital investment point of view, speed wins in broadband, and cable is faster. Cable is cable on average are providing the higher speed, over 2.5 megabits, and telco isn't. And as higher speed is demanded by consumers because of video largely and similar kind of applications, This implies that in order to stay competitive with cable, the telephone industry is going to have to substantially increase its capital spending. That's, of course, why Verizon is spending on its fiber project. AT&T and others have to upgrade or continue to put money into fiber for their DSL-based product, pushing the fiber further and further into the neighborhoods to provide the higher speeds. Florida is doing pretty well amongst the large states, fourth amongst the largest states in terms of penetration. And on a graphical basis, Florida a little higher than the national average in terms of penetration, a little bit below the average in terms of growth. And I'm no expert in Florida, but from this map, based on the FCC's most recent zip code analysis, the only place in Florida you don't get broadband is in the Everglades, if I understand where the Everglades are, and a few other places like that. Generally speaking, Florida seems to have a pretty good broadband penetration and availability. Wireless. Florida, again, is slightly above the national averages in wireless penetration. We are seeing, we're now nationally, probably this data is through 205 and 206, 207, nationally expecting to be in the 70s. That kind of penetration, though, means, again, more incremental capital, less incremental revenue. The FCC sees this as its national view of wireless. Those are great statistics in some respects, but what you're seeing is the number of subscribers goes up 13%, the volume goes up 16%, and revenues are only going up 9% because the price per minute is going down. So the FCC thinks this is a great story. Investors look at that and go, not so good, or not that encouraging. And again, you know, the wireless industry has been the favorite for many years because it has grown so strongly, and the growth expectations continue. But in those out years, it's more and more capital, continuous capital investment to meet the volume demands. And so you get with higher volumes, but the competition driving the price per minute lower, you're getting declining revenue growth. Not a good story from an investor's point of view. At least it's not the big growth story that investors have been enjoying for the last probably decade in wireless. And in fact, there's now at least a possibility, at least by one analyst's view, that Verizon and Singular, the two big gorillas now in wireless, are capturing 80% of the growth of the new customers coming into the wireless business, and perhaps they're beginning to really gain traction in terms of their ability to dominate the market, and it certainly, to me, raises the question of whether there's an emerging duopoly in wireless, which would, from an investor's point of view, be a good thing. The CLEC industry, briefly, seems to be on its way back. There used to be hundreds. I used to be in the CLEC business, fortunately got out on the upside of the boom. We've seen almost total consolidation of the CLEC industry, so now we're down to just a few, and those few CLEC players are doing well, as you saw in that graph. Level 3 and Time Warner Telecom were the best performers in the telecom sector last year. And there's a pretty good presence of CLECs here in Florida. IP is everything. Everything's going IP. But the problem with IP is, from the investor's point of view, pricing, the expectation is pricing is going to go down 25% annually on internet backbone. Right? The good news is that's better than the historic 50 to 60% declines, but 25% going out price reductions when, at the same time, you have the prospect of a shortage of capacity, implying a need to make further investments. Again, is this going to actually encourage investors to put in the necessary capacity to meet the demand if pricing keeps dropping? Investors. They like, most investors, there are some investors who like chaos and picking the winners, but generally speaking, they like less competition. And they're starting to see it. The analysts seem almost giddy in some respects lately, noting price increases. Price increases on basic wireline prices, noting more favorable state regulatory environments is one reason, and interestingly enough, competitive signaling, which if you have an antitrust lawyer in the house, the words competitive signaling sort of put up the antenna. Reduced wireless pricing competition is expected unless a carrier does something silly to try to, like Sprint, to gain market share. But prices are expected to at least stabilize in the wireless area and not go down as fast. And the Bank of America has been doing a study for the last few years of a typical package of telephone, broadband, long distance, et cetera. And they've actually seen that go up for the first time, up 3%. So there's at least the analysts are beginning to see and giving a fairly strong reaction to the prospect of price at least increases or price stabilities, including in the enterprise sector as this last spring. So the question that everyone is asking or is concerned with, you know, is our multiple local broadband infrastructures sustainable? If they can get their heads around the fact that two or three carriers can make money providing broadband services, particularly in the local markets, then they can get funded. But if there's an expectation that perhaps only one can survive or less than five or six can survive, well, it's going to be hard to fund them until there's some clarity on whether you can get the survival. And this, I think, this chart sort of summarizes the dilemma. It's pretty obvious that in New York City, where I live, the market is concentrated enough, rich enough, et cetera, probably to sustain multiple broadband infrastructures. But on the far right-hand side of the chart, rural areas with sparse populations, do you really think there's going to be multiple broadband, competing broadband networks in sparsely populated rural areas? And somewhere between those extremes, you go from several to a few to one. And that is probably the big question. Our view, from our CITI view, this goes back to our original analysis in 2003, is that telecom is probably a natural oligopoly. Not our preference or recommendation, just probably the way it's going to be. And back in 2003, we suggested that you'd end up with about 2.5 wireline carriers, 2 RBOC and some others. You're starting to see that, I think, with Verizon and AT&T, 2.5 wireless carriers, 1 CDMA, 1 GSM, and you're starting to see that, and you've got 1 independent of the RBOC, Sprint, the cable companies. So this is at least what we thought we'd see, and it seems to be that way. The Bank of America analyst certainly is thinking that this duopoly is emerging. The Merrill Lynch analyst certainly thinks that there's some oligopolistic price signaling going on, at least in the video area. And they're beginning to see or expect even more merger and acquisition activity, particularly before in the year 2007, before a new administration comes in. There's an expectation, at least possibly, of a Democratic administration less friendly to mergers. So if you want to do some mergers and get them done, and particularly if, for example, these technologies start to compete with each other, it makes it more difficult to acquire because you start getting actual competition problems. And the investors are actually expecting more consolidation in 07. So, and the FCC, as a quick point, seems to understand that you have to balance competition and investment. They're almost mutually exclusive. If you want investment, you may have to have less competition. You certainly have to balance it, and this is FCC's strategic plan view. So the future, as we see it, and I think as Wall Street is seeing it for telecom, it is going to be unstable. It's going to be more concentration, less innovation, higher or stabilized prices, and sort of a period of improvement. And I think that's the period we're in now. The question is, what's next? And we're also, I think, seeing the beginning of the next cycle of enthusiasm for telco TV, for IPTV, for YouTubes, etc. A lot of the same sort of hype that we were seeing in the late 1990s is starting to come back. So the question is, are we going to have another crash? We don't know, of course, but you have to be able to have capital plans that accommodate the idea of booms and busts, and you have to be pretty adept at adapting to these changes, both regulators as well as investors. And overall, until there's a little more clarity on the future of regulators' view of oligopoly, a regulator is going to try to force more competition than the markets can support. Those kind of questions, until they're answered, you're probably going to have at least a number of investors holding back and not investing as much as some regulators might want them to be. So it's probably going to be an interesting couple of years till the oligopoly versus competition versus monopoly situation works out. Thank you.